You're listening to KBOO KBOO Portland. Next up is Calculated Conversation with David and Ken.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the screening of Can You Dig This? On Thursday, November 14th, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater.
To change the community, you have to change the composition of the soil. We are the soil.
If this plant can die and it grows back in a bad environment in a city like this, then for sure I know I can fall and get back up and do the same thing.
I put a carrot in the ground and all hell broke loose.
Again, that's Can You Dig This? On Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale.
This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio.
Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m.
We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Saturday, December 14th. The sale will be held on December 21st. Stay tuned for details.
Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasure to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for our community radio station, KBOO.
If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email volunteer at kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 213.
KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
In correctional facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it get funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what, I won't hesitate to diss one or two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well I'm dropping English, even if Yella makes it a cappella. I still express
yes. Welcome back. This is the wonderful Calculated Conversation radio show, because there's certain things we just have to talk about.
Yes.
I'm your host, David Jefferson.
I'm Ken Jones.
Ken Jones, we back in the house, and we definitely got a special guest here in the building, and it shall be a treat. We have Julie Bond Blank, yes, from ARMS, and that is Abuse Recovery Ministry Services, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, the first time I said that, your colleague had to call me. She said, I heard you try to say it and you missed out letter. I was like, okay, this time I'm studying.
It takes some practice. It's all right.
How are you feeling today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm amazing. I can't speak for sorry, bro. I'm like,
how are you, man?
I'm like, we're good. An apple a day.
Hey, right.
That's right. He's
I just
been
had an apple.
His snack.
I did my shimmy. I'm fed. I'm nurtured. One thing, right quick, listeners, we are live today. So if you want to pick up that telephone and dial, we've got, 503-231-8187?
Oh, you remember.
I still don't even know my phone number, and I know this phone number. That's not a win.
Yeah, so, yeah, because every now and again, we have to record some shows outside the studio just for timing purposes and convenience. This time, we're in the station, and we are live, so please feel free to call in. Julie would love you to call and ask some questions. Well, I don't want to, without further ado, this is an important conversation, so
yes,
I think we should just jump right into it. So we know you work for ARMS, Abuse Recovery and Ministry Services, right?
Yes.
And I want to say that I was first introduced to your company by a colleague of yours. She was listening to, you might remember Cynthia.
Yes.
She was listening to, I think, a couple of our shows possibly. Mm-hmm. She invited me to an event. And that was a fundraiser mm-hmm. over at, was that Embassy Suites
Embassy
at Airport?
Embassy Suites in Portland, yep.
Yeah, and I remember being, I told Ken about it already, but now I'm telling you. But I remember being so, you know, just a little bit drained. You know, I do a few things, business, radio shows, podcasts, and stuff like that. And it was just an awkward time, but I accepted the invite. And I didn't even know Cynthia. I didn't really know ARMS or anything, but... Again, we talked about higher power a little bit out there, and I do have a spiritual connection that lets me know when certain things need to be attended to. And so I got up off my butt, and I went down there and met up with Cynthia. She sat me down, and I listened to the whole fundraiser, and I was just blown away. I couldn't believe what I was hearing and seeing, and I was just in amazement. And I was like, this is powerful. Like, this is why I needed to be here. There's information here that I don't have, mm-hmm. you know? And again, that's the whole idea behind the Calculated Conversation movement, you know? And the testimonies that I heard, you know, from some of the victims and some of the, I don't know why I call them perpetrators. What's a better word?
That's all right.
Oh, is there a better word?
Abusers.
Abusers,
yep,
okay.
Yep, yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
So I was really, I liked the fact that they had, you know, testimony from some of the abused and some ex-abusers, mm-hmm. which you really don't get a chance to hear about. So I wanted to go deeper. We talked about it on the show. I guess Cynthia shared it with you guys, and then all of a sudden, here you are. We had to have you on here, so we're very, very blessed that you was able to find it in your schedule to come down and talk to us
yes.
today.
Yes.
So... Again, without further ado, can you give us a little bit of your background? What's ARMS about? What do they do exactly, and why are they so important to the community? What gap are they filling here, would you say?
There is a gap in domestic violence mm-hmm. in all our communities, and the first reason is because we don't like to recognize that it happens, and mm-hmm. when in fact it's 3 in 10, women in particular, but also men, who are abused. And whether that is 10 people sitting on a pew, whether that is 10 people sitting around your banquet table, whatever that might be, 3 mm-hmm. at your table mm-hmm. have been affected in some way by domestic abuse. Mm. And so it's a full picture. And although ARMS started out 22 years ago mostly focused on the victims program, they soon began to realize that that's only half of the calculation. Jeez. And that some of these people might be salvageable, you know, as mm-hmm. people who are choosing to use abuse mm-hmm. in their everyday life. Mm-hmm. And so then brought up the need for batterers intervention as well. And not just for men, we also have batterers intervention for women. We mm-hmm. have a lot of women that use what we call secondary abuse. Mm-hmm. So okay. they return it when they're getting it. You know, they might hit or kick back. They might verbally abuse somebody who's being abusive to them.
Okay.
But also when they're making not good choices and they're becoming very angry very quickly at their kids, as an example, and screaming at them, you know, it's been a stressful day or whatever. Those types of behaviors, too, we also, you know, look at in the women's program for abusers as well.
Okay.
But they started with Her Journey, which is the victims program, and it's specifically for women. And it's not that we don't care about men. We know that men are abused. Mm-hmm. We know it's not reported as often. Mm-hmm. Women are reported more, and there's a higher majority. And so that is who we currently choose to, okay. you know. There are support groups out there that will help both men and women that are partners with us
okay.
that we can refer people to. Yeah.
Okay. But you guys help them too on some level, right? Or you just refer them to your partners?
If they are male victims, we would refer them to our partners. I mean, anybody can call, you know, and get time on the phone, you know, with me or somebody else, you know, and get support. And okay. that's really, really important. And often that's the first step because victims don't usually feel believed.
Right,
they've been
right,
through
right.
years of, you know, people thinking they're crazy and their abuser accusing them of being
stuff.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the abuser will even go as far to go to other people and say, you know, oh, I don't know what she's thinking. She's been a little nuts these days. She
right.
needs meds, you know, whatever the case
right.
might be. And so not only do they have that natural inclination to feel like, okay, what's wrong with me? But they have this support for years and years of something is wrong with me, even mm-hmm. though it's not. So it's important to have all those, you know, components outlined in programs.
Is the HER, is that an acronym for something?
Her Journey?
Her Journey?
Nope.
No,
no,
it's just
not.
Her Journey.
Just
okay.
Her Journey.
All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
All right. your role mm-hmm. in this. Can you kind of highlight what it is that you do specifically?
Sure. So I actually started with ARMS about 7 years ago, and it was on a volunteer basis.
Okay. I don't want to cut you off, but I did.
That's all right.
tell us just a little bit about ARMS so the listeners know, like, how long has ARMS been been around exactly?
22 years.
I heard they've been doing a thing for a while.
Mm-hmm. They have. So it's a program, honestly, that needs to be in every city and every community and every county.
Okay.
And I think part of the reason they brought me on was to help with that as far as marketing and to reach. Since I've been on board, we've been able to take the program nationally and wrote leaders training that is now available online, whereas before it was only available locally. And so we just had our first group open in New York, of all places, the East Coast. Yeah, it was very exciting. And we also have groups internationally. We have some in Mexico and Kenya as well.
Yes, I saw that,
and
yeah.
And other interests. So it's just a matter of time, but the organization really needed to move to the next step of pushing it out there because it's such a successful and life-saving program.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And your role is, what do I need you to do there?
So I'm the Director of Women's Services.
Okay.
And when I came on officially 6 or 7 years ago, I came on, well, let's say this, I marched into her journey because I had some of my own healing to do, and I said, I want to help other ladies not ever get to the spot where I'm in. And as I was sitting there hearing the lessons, you know, my God, my higher power just spoke to me and said, girl, you're not done healing yet. And I'm like, what? And so, you know, there were lessons I would just sit there and hear, and just tears were pouring down my face. And my leader was amazing. And she was like, you know, you're going to be okay, and you're going to get through this. And I went through the whole thing, and I had to go through it more than once before I was ready to lead. But when I was ready, I was like, you know, it's still my original intent is I want to help, you know, other ladies in this situation. So I worked from afar as a volunteer for ARMS for the 6 years, not only leading groups, but also doing their marketing from afar on a volunteer basis and helping them get their website up and their social media going. We have a fun time on the Facebook page. There's a lot of people on there, and that's good. And then my husband and I were actually in Chicago for a few years and decided we would come back to Oregon to retire. But the tides turned there, and God told us we could come back sooner, which I was thrrilled about. And this position opened at ARMS. So I said, would you consider me? And they said, what? You're coming back? And I'm like, yes, we're coming back. Hey, and they seemed very happy as well. So it seemed to work out very good.
Nice.
So,
like a glove?
Like a glove. Absolutely. Like a glove. Well, you know.
Hey, Jim Carrey's like a glove?
Hey. Like the mask? No, no, they, you know, they... It's important that people have a passion for the industry. And it's funny, though, because sometimes we'll have people who were victims or are victims that apply for a job and they think they're absolutely perfect for the job. But we have to make sure they are to a point in their healing process where they're not going to be damaged, where they're not going to go backwards, you know, where they will be fully healed and be able to help other people, because otherwise they'll traumatize themselves and other people.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
So I had that passion for it, obviously, you know, and they knew that. So I think that was helpful.
Julie, how do you know? I mean, you kind of gave some short examples right there, but is there a definitive way to tell when somebody's fully healed? Is there a certain way they talk? Do they react differently to certain scenarios that may make them revisit some trauma? Like, are they able to, is it just tough conversations about things they went through without sweating? Or?
I think there's a part of us that's always healing. But I think when you're mostly healed, you talk about more about your healing than your hurt that happened. You are more focused on other people in their journey. I talk to a lot of ladies that are so still deep in their trauma that they're still trying to convince everybody else that this is what happened. You know, you see on Facebook, you see like the narcissist boards, you know, where they're completely focused on my ex was a narcissist and this is why he did that and this is why he did that. As soon as I see anybody go to that point where they're doing that, they stop their healing process. They are focused on their abuser. They are not focused on their own journey.
Right.
And so I know right away, you know, they're not only are they not ready, but they're halted, you know, where they're at. They're at a stopgap, and they cannot go further until they refuse to focus on him or her and decide to, you know, focus on their own journey. There's reasons, and I hate to say this, there's reasons why we are victims and survivors. There are... things in our family of origin, forgive me to my parents who are listening, but there are things in our family of origin that might make us decide that A, abuse is okay, mm-hmm. or B, abuse is normal, mm-hmm. or C, I should put up with it for longer than normal because of, you know, dot, 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 dot.
Right.
And you really have to come around to relearn, and that's what the Her Journey mm-hmm. program does, is to relearn, why was I accepting of abuse? Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
where is my true value? You know, and then what boundaries do I need to put in place okay. so that this is not happening to me anymore? How mm-hmm. do I say no to this and stop that cycle? I want everybody to be able to look at a Thanksgiving table of 25 descendants someday and say, I broke that cycle of abuse.
Right. Yeah.
My kids did not grow up in abuse. They did not grow up to be victims. Mm-hmm. My grandkids are safe and healthy, and I want everybody to have that experience because that's what happens when you turn it around and you decide to heal regardless of the circumstances.
Yes.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, trying to change the narrative of, you know, of your family history, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we do know that a lot of children grow up seeing domestic violence yes. as normal, right?
Yes.
And so what I kind of notice is that they tend to naturally and not really and not consciously, you know, adapt to some of those you know, some of those factors,
yes.
you know, and start to display some of those characteristics.
Yes.
And then on the other hand, don't you also have other kids that grow up and be like, I've seen this and I don't want no parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's putting kids into a tough position. And I feel like that a lot of parents don't really understand that their child is watching and learning all of this.
Absolutely.
And yeah. and starting to develop this as the norm.
Right. And so recent stats actually say that children who are exposed to emotional abuse, even if it's not directed at them,
right.
have higher cases of PTSD
mm-hmm.
and anxiety as if they had been physically beaten.
Right.
And so, you know, we work with the parents that come to our program to, you know, we don't want to make anybody feel guilty. We want them to say no to abuse for their health as well, but mm-hmm. for their kids' sake,
yeah.
because their kids are growing up with PTSD and anxiety as if they had been beaten all their life, and they really haven't been. So it affects them tremendously. And what I want people to understand is, although kids have a higher incidence of being involved in domestic abuse, it's not always as a perpetrator.
Right.
A lot of kids will grow up to be a victim instead.
Right.
So that's prime for the kid you mentioned
yeah.
that grew up and said, I will never have anything to do with it. You know, nobody will ever touch me, beat me, whatever.
Yeah.
That they are actually in a prime position to be, you know, more susceptible to being a victim and abuser to an abuser. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not trying
to. No. It's just, it's information.
There is
that's
great
where...
hope out there, but people have to step forward and have to get help. And
yeah.
they have to say, you know what? No matter what my abuser said, did, or won't say, or won't do, I will heal.
Yes. Right.
I
right.
will heal.
Yes.
And this is going to be okay. And that, you know, happened in my circumstances. My
right.
abuser never said I'm sorry, never acknowledged, never did any of that, was offered help multiple times, mm-hmm. and it never happened.
Right.
And if I was waiting for that, I'd still be waiting for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I said, you know, I'm going to heal.
Yes.
And my kids, we're going to heal. We're going to get better, and we're going to do all right. So it's a decision that each one of us makes.
You think that maybe he thought that he didn't do anything wrong?
Possibly.
It was normal?
Possibly. Possibly, yeah.
And so speaking of him not doing anything wrong and going deeper in domestic violence, I mm-hmm. feel like, I'm glad you're here, because I feel like a lot of people don't really know what the definition of it is.
Sure.
I think a lot of people have their ideas based off, you know, limited research or limited knowledge
yeah.
or just limited experience.
Mm-hmm.
Can you define domestic violence first
sure.
of all?
I'm going to bring up some hard topics here just because I know that
Perfect.
You guys are accepting of that.
That's what we're here for.
Good. Yes. So did you know that pornography is sexual abuse?
Mm.
Yeah. Toward your spouse? It is. Did you know that when a woman goes to the store and comes back and has to account for every single penny spent,
mm-hmm.
that's financial abuse? And sometimes even making her in charge of the checkbook can be a way to financially abuse.
And these are all fall under domestic abuse.
Absolutely,
okay.
domestic mm-hmm. violence. So there's many categories. There is spiritual, there is sexual, and sexual is not just rape.
Mm-hmm.
It can be put down sexually. It can be insisting that you dress a certain way. Mm. We knew a gal whose husband would basically abandon her at any party or event they went to. And she would be stuck talking to whoever, and it was completely a setup so that on the way home he could blow up and say, I saw you talking to that guy. You know, what do you got going on with that guy? When she was like trying to be a wallflower, but people would approach her because they felt bad for her. Mm-hmm. You know, so those kinds of things happen. Emotional abuse, you know, sexual abuse can also mean unwanted sexual jokes. Mm-hmm. If you're always the brunt of a joke, or your husband, you're at a gathering and your husband or significant other, you know, is always making you the brunt of the joke, then that's abusive. Sarcasm and cynicism can be, you know, abusive. So although there's lots of different categories, they do not all leave physical bruises. And that's why we call physical abuse the sanity abuse, even though it's insane and not really sane, is because people recognize it.
Yeah.
And they see it.
Right.
So.
And that's how they define it for the most part.
Correct.
A lot of people think that, well, if no one got hit, then there's no abuse.
Absolutely.
Yes. Right.
Yes. And that's not the case. So, and the damage from emotional abuse, you know, in studies now is shown to be far greater than the physical wounds that heal. So if there's any,
you know, let's say there's females out there listening that don't really, or males, I guess, mm-hmm. I mean, that don't know that they're being, like, what do you think they should do? What steps should a woman take or a man take if they feel like they may be mm-hmm. being a victim of domestic violence currently?
I would get wisdom. I've, you know, learned in my, I have an amazing dad, and thanks to him, I learned things like when I was growing up to seek wisdom from multiple sources. So if I have an issue making a decision, or if, you know, he led that example for me, and he would always go to various people, and he mm-hmm. wouldn't go to one and say, oh, you're right, and go to the other and say, right. oh, you're right. He would get a variety. And so I've always done that in my life. We have on our ARMS site, which is abuserecovery.org, we have some very informative articles on all the types of abuse, you know, so that, you know, are you really being abused? We also have an article on the 15 warning signs that a relationship could be abusive, which we have a lot of young people access for dating violence and all of that. But you can call and talk to us too. I mean, people in the industry know that emotional abuse, you know, exists. I have had guys even call me and say, is she abusing me? This is what's going on. And we're able to work through it. But there is a difference between abuse and normal conflict. And normal conflict happens, you know, whether it's a marriage or partnership or sibling relationship or whatever. But domestic abuse is a pattern, and it's a pattern in order to gain power and control.
Right.
That is the goal, is to control your partner into certain behaviors or certain actions, and use it as a pattern basis. So that's important to remember. So if they're calling up going, you know, we got in a fight the other day, and you know, I'm not going to say it is or isn't. I'm going to say, tell me more.
Yes.
Tell me more. What else has happened? What else has been going on? How are your kids doing? Yeah, that's a good indicator to me as well of what's going on in the home. So
it's safe to say that a conflict would mean that we're trying to compromise and reach a decision that's beneficial to us both. Abuse would be, you're going to do what I want to do regardless of how you feel, and I don't really care about that, right?
You know,
is that sort of an idea of it?
The word of submission floats around out there. Submission versus depression, and we have a lesson on that in her journey. And when I came to her journey, submission was a bad word for me because I had actually had oppression, not submission. But what I've since learned is that submission is a gift that you give, and it's not just the woman giving to the man or the man giving to the woman. You know, it is a mutual gift. I mean, you give and take, right? We submit to the laws of the road when we drive. We stop at red lights. We submit to a cop if they pull us over. And in a relationship, it's the
most
same.
Most people do.
Yeah, most, hopefully. All of y'all should do that, for sure. But the point being is, if it is what we would call demanded submission, you will obey me, you will do this, you will do this as I want because I'm the man of the house or I'm the woman of the house or whatever, then it's not really submission at all. That's oppression. Anytime that's demanded, it is oppression, not submission. So there's a difference there. And you should not submit. I'd like to tell this to all the people out there. If your partner is not treating you with equality and respect and with honor, even all the religious backgrounds that I know of, you are not required to submit if your person is not first submitted to their God or their higher power, you know, and living the way they should live.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's important.
I had a because I did want to kind of touch on you guys' mission statement, the healing and transformation from a faith perspective, to those impacted by DV and controlling relationships. So how important is the faith element in this setup?
Well, in our setup, it's extremely important. And I just would like to say on a side note that the faith-based programs have a much higher success rate than the secular ones.
Okay.
Now, in saying that, I also want you to know that we have people of all faiths in our programs and no faiths in our program. Okay. In fact, the gentleman speaker that you heard at the banquet, his name is Tommy, he outright says he doesn't believe in God. But he's been through the program 3 times, and it has spoke to him, and it has helped him.
Okay.
So, you know, our rate is better as far as healing for victims and as far as men, you know, getting help and as far as women getting help and not returning to it. So from our perspective, it's the core of what we do.
Yes.
And it's a calling that the founder, Stacy, really felt that God had on her life.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, it is important. But
absolutely,
we've helped all, and we will continue to help all that need help. So, yeah.
And a question just in terms of like demographics, because you did mention like the younger people. What do you see, like, is there a general age range, or is this just all over the board? Where does it lean towards in the number, or as far as the numbers go?
Well, it seems to start with dating relationships.
Okay.
And so these days that can be as young as, you know, 13 or 14. Not when I was growing up. Right. I had to wait till I was 16. But now, you know, you've got kids out there that are 12, 13 going out and having a boyfriend or whatever, you know, that might mean. And we see boys being controlling, and we see girls that are, you know, putting the aspects forward of a victim and not standing up for themselves, and vice versa.
Okay.
So I would say, you know, it starts earlier than any of us would hope for it, you know, to start, you know. Now, in my case, you know, I was in my early 20s, and I got married, and it didn't all come up until after that.
Right.
In fact, it kind of started on our honeymoon. There were some controlling aspects there. But for many people, it starts before that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I look at my history, actually. So that's an interesting point that you bring up.
Mm-hmm.
Because my history before I married my first husband was also a main boyfriend who he used drugs. He was an alcoholic. He did not behave the best. He made some abusive decisions. And so now I've been able to, look back more in my life and see my pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just my first husband that I married. I had a pattern that my first husband kind of saved me from, I thought. And so that's also a big part of her journey is, you know, how do you prevent this from happening again?
Right.
How do you get in a healthy relationship and heal enough so that you're not dragging this stuff, you know, into this other relationship? And that's an important component of recognizing that piece of yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, that goes into, I know you speak on that often, of, you know, taking time, especially in a relationship, not just, you know, in a scenario where you've got a case of some type of domestic violence, but just taking time to heal in general and not carrying that. I think there's a lot of people who just want the comfort of somebody there and probably damage a lot of people along the way and never start the healing process for themselves. They just keep putting Band-Aids over it and moving forward.
Exactly. And they feel that a new person is the Band-Aid, when in fact, you know, they still have healing to do on their own, or they're never going to have a healthy relationship is what it comes down to.
Yes.
Yep. Important.
Man, that's deep.
Sorry, there's a lot of information in there.
Yes,
yeah, but, you know, like just like anything, it really does sound like self-awareness and accountability, even in situations that aren't actually violent, you know, like violently domestic. There are situations where people are just hurt overall in relationships, you know. And as I just look at a lot of the outcomes and a lot of experiences and how people coming out of rough relationships, you know, how they handle themselves. I mean, typically people don't seem to see the importance in the accountability and looking at how is this able to happen, you know. Like, it's always, he did this, she did this, he's a narcissist, she's a narcissist. It's rarely ever what it is about me that allowed a narcissist to get my life and gain control of me. What standards did I not have? And like, it seems like that would be one of the main components to really healing in anything, is, you know, looking at what role you had. It's really it's really hard to, you know, get yourself to a, you know, a state of you know, opposite of complacency, you know what I'm saying, and forward movement without looking at what you did, you know, without looking at your role. I mean, I've never seen it happen. You can't educate yourself based off what other people do.
Right.
You can only educate yourself off what you do and what you understood and why certain things happen. And those are the only changes that's going to make changes in your life.
Right.
Right.
You are responsible for you. I am responsible for me. And that means my attitudes and my actions are my responsibility and yours are yours. Mm-hmm. And when I teach her journey groups, because I do still teach a few groups, for the first, probably 3 or 4 weeks, I get women in that are extremely focused on, how do I fix him? How do I convince him he needs antidepressants? How do I convince him that the alcohol is the problem and he needs to work it out? Or how can I get him to go to counseling?
Right.
And, you know, we work really hard on working on her. And eventually that kind of changes. The 3rd or 4th week in, they kind of start thinking, okay, wait a minute. I need to work on this. I need to work on that. But it's a process. It's very normal. I don't want to say normal, but it's part of our world, you know. Okay. And it started back, well, to be biblical, it started back in Genesis, you know, when Adam said, she made me eat the apple. And she said, the serpent made me eat the apple. You know, it started that soon, you know, with sin in the world. And God does not heal our free choice. He doesn't want a bunch of robots. Hey. That was not the point, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So we're all responsible for ourselves. So Her Journey and Virtue in Mankind are the other two programs. Also take a big thing on that. And I'm glad you brought up accountability, because it is so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen people go through the program that have not had their program of accountability in place afterwards, and they are more likely to fail. And that's whether it's you're an abuser or whether, you know, you're a victim, you know, whether that means I go home and I say, okay, somebody treated me this way today, and I kind of shirked back and I don't know what to do. And my husband, Bill, who's amazing now, says, you know, nope, you go back and you talk to them. And I'm like, no, you're right. You know, no, you're right. Bill. I got to do this.
Shout out, so Bill.
Bill is my amazing second chance. And I just like to bring that up because he's not my first husband. And I want people to know that he absolutely treasures me and adores me. And life is beautiful, really, when you finally say no to abuse and you decide to heal, no matter what your abuser is doing.
Right.
Life can be really beautiful. And I look back, I'm like, oh, why was I stuck so long?
Yeah.
I'm grateful for second chances.
Yeah, so. It makes you kind of look back and think, what was I thinking?
Exactly.
Like, it's crazy, right?
Except with the exception of my 3 amazing children that I have out of my relationship. Yes. I wouldn't give them up for the world, of course, and they were part of all that and beloved to me, and I can't imagine my life without them. So, you know, God works in mysterious ways, and there's things that were meant for bad that he turned around and said, we're going to make this a blessing. You know, you heal, you do your part. And I will bless that effort, and that's what happens. So.
God's like, we're going to give you something out of it. Yeah. quick question. You talked about accountability. And,
yep.
Well, I did, I guess, and you chimed in, and now I'm back on it. but I'm guessing that there are some people that go to the program that do not become accountable.
Yep.
And I'm guessing that there are people that's been through the program that reoffend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys take them back?
Absolutely.
And when you do take them back, is the program the same, or is it changed around, or do you come up with another action plan for this person since they might be more of a risk, or is there, how do you handle that?
So there's one thing we've learned over this 22 years, and that is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay.
So we get well-meaning people in all the time that say, oh, let's rewrite the program, or let's make it a little more modern and add this and add that. But the fact of the matter is that we get testimonials week after week after week that say, your program saved my life.
I know, I've seen that.
You have.
Yeah,
see,
I loved it.
That's cool that you've seen that.
It was
that's
unbelievable.
Great. I'm not lying. They come in 3 times a week, at least I hear, your program saved my life. Your program saved my marriage. Your program saved my children. And what is more validating and rewarding than that? And so as much as we want to hear people's opinions, the program works as it works. So to answer that, when they come back in the program, as long as they seem like they want to work the program, and sometimes they're mandated. So we do have cases of Yes, sometimes we have cases of either the court mandating them or DHS mandating them. So they don't have a choice. So they call us up and they're kind of like, you know, I need to start the program again and blah, blah, blah. Yes, it's the same program. But it is individual enough that a facilitator can work with a person and know, you know, what their former weaknesses were and know, you know, maybe what happened along the way and what they want to work towards now. So although the programming is the same, things are always different because, you know, and the group members are different as well. And group members are good at holding each other accountable. Yeah. So that's kind of the funny part we've seen of it, but that's been very effective.
Are most of your clients single?
No, I wouldn't say no. No, a lot of them are in the middle of, you know, a divorce or separation due to their actions.
Oh, okay.
You know, as far as a mankind and virtue, and a lot of the ones we have through her journey are still in their abuse. But there's been other ones that
they're still in their abusive relationships.
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
But we do have other ones that are just, you know, are done and just want to heal. Or maybe they thought they were healed, but now they're ready to move on. Mm. And they want to make sure that they're not dragging this stuff with them.
Mm.
Or maybe they got out of their relationship and then they found themselves in another abusive relationship. And they're like, wait a minute, I need to. So, yeah, we do have repeats. And I wouldn't say the majority are single at all. Majority of them are attached. Yep.
And sorry if you mentioned this before. How long is the program?
I was just going to ask that. Yeah, you too. Yeah.
Wow, you guys work well together. <do you know? laughs>
Yeah.
So that varies. Her journey is 15 weeks long.
Okay.
But it is free for victims. We get grants to cover that cost. And that is an open group. So they can come as many times as they want, or they can come in and out, you know, whatever. The Mankind and Virtue are closer to a year long.
Ooh.
They need that. Year. Most of them stay a year, and that they're not even released after a year if they're not doing well. That's up to the facilitator to work with them on that and to really see they need to be making progress, doing their assignments, participating in group, you know, showing that they're sorry, you know, to their victim. There's all these parameters that need to be happening. So we can pretty much tell when they're what we call checking off the boxes or when they're there legitimately.
So the people that you get to come your way, how are they being made aware of you? Is it word of mouth? Is it because of the courts?
Mm-hmm.
How are people
mostly
in contact?
A huge variety. So for Mankind and Virtue, a lot of it is the courts.
Okay.
But more and more now that we're getting, you know, the word out, there's more coming in other avenues. Victims usually find us on social media is a big aspect, or our website. Or, you know, today, I heard three times today when I picked up the phone that a friend referred me. So a friend, you know, knew about it. So, and we have had some media here and there, so that helps, you know, with that. We're working on, you know, increasing that so more people know about us. The banquet's helpful because, you know, people bring guests that haven't heard of ARMS before, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, it's so good to hear what's going on. I had no idea.
Right.
You know, and word spreads. So we track those things, but as far as a percentage of anything, I can't really give you anything without looking at that.
Well, I know you don't run these programs, but just real quick, can you explain a little bit about what Mankind and Virtue is?
Sure. So Mankind and Virtue are very focused on helping them be responsible for their behavior.
Who's them?
The people that come through the program.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's not just males in that program?
It's not just what?
Males, men.
No, we have Virtue is for females. So Mankind is for men, Virtue is for women. But both have chosen abuse as part of their...
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So we have to, I hate to say this, but we have to educate them just as much as the Her Journey people. So, you know, the first sessions that we go through are a lot about the types of abuse.
Mm.
A lot of it is about holding them accountable. What types of abuse did you use this week?
Mm.
We have them keep a homework log where they say, okay, this happened this week and this was my reaction. And, oh, wait, this is what I should have done. And they have to turn those in every week to their facilitator who reads those. If they're mandated by the courts, there's a point in time where they have to read their police report to their fellow people. And that's pretty, you know, embarrassing. So it happens as well. But they learn to take responsibility. And what you need to remember is that abuse deep down is based on beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some kind of belief in them that believes it is okay to be entitled, or it's okay to see people as not equal, or it's okay to treat people like this. And so that's what really we have to get down to that root of. In order to change the behavior, you know, you have to change the belief. So a lot of the program is based around that.
Okay. And so again, I know you're not a part of these programs, but you know, just as a rule of thumb, do you see Is there a major difference between the type of abuse women engage in as opposed to what men do as abusers?
I would say their beliefs underneath are the same, or it wouldn't allow them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
With men, we do often see more physical, of course, and women sometimes are less physical. But we also have women in the program that have been physical, that have slapped or kicked or you know, done something of that nature or, you know, retaliated against something that was done to them. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as a specific percentage, I wouldn't know that as far as, you know, what percent is physical versus spiritual versus emotional. But somebody is not mandated to the program usually unless it's been a physical altercation. You know, no. You don't do a no contact order or restraining order or, you know, do any of that unless it has, you know, compounded to the point where it's physical. So usually they come in because of that basis, but there's a lot of things underneath, and that's, you know, that have happened before.
That's because it's probably harder to prove in court, huh?
Correct.
When it's not physical, I'm guessing.
Correct. So one of the classes I teach is how to set boundaries if you're just in emotional abuse, because, you know, they often have gone to police and tried to file a restraining order and cannot, because there's no proof and there's no bruises. And so a few weeks ago, I taught a class to the family skill builders, and they're the caseworkers for DHS. So they work with the families that are separated from their parents. And that's what we talked about, was how to help your clients set boundaries when it's an emotional abuse situation so that they're still safe when they can't file a restraining order. So I hope those laws will change someday. Right. That needs to change.
Okay, so her journey probably, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but do they have more, you have more clients in her journey than maybe Mankind in Virtue?
I would say at this point, yes. I would say that only, however, because her journey is available nationwide and internationally, where right now Mankind in Virtue are available locally. And that's changing. We're getting ready to get the training for Mankind online so that we can expand and get that to be a national program as well.
Okay.
So because of that restriction, I would say that's the case, yes.
Who runs the Mankind program?
So Jerry and Stacy, who are the founders of the business.
They both
run it. Yep, okay. They are facilitators, and we also have a couple other group facilitators as well. So
that is crazy. I'm processing a bunch.
Am
of
I
this.
Overwhelming you? I'm sorry.
No. It's just the notes and great information in the way in which a lot of these things are being framed.
Mm-hmm.
For it's easily digestible.
Okay.
It's still some of it's new information, of course.
Right.
And I just think for people like us who are here trying to seek and just being curious about it and being able to get it delivered in the way in which it is coming across, it's just like, yes, this is
right.
It needs to be out there.
Yes,
it does.
Oh, and before we forget, keep in mind the number is 503-231-8187. Please feel free to call in, give us your story, or just connect with us or Julie, you know, just to share some energy. Definitely like to hear from you.
So I do have a question. And with going through the process or the program, is it like partially incentive-based? Like are there milestones that they kind of hit as going through, like completing 4 weeks and then it's a certificate or anything along those lines?
So graduation party?
I know it seems like a great idea to have a graduation party, and it's a lot of fun. But we have found that in her journey in particular, if we graduate them or give them a certificate, they then feel they are done and can't come back. And it's more of an open-ended program where they can come back if they need it.
Got it.
Now, Mankind of Virtue have a few more, you know, things going on in there that the facilitator will work with them if they're not making progress in this area or this area. But her journey, we have found that to be the case. So we try not to do that. Now, the exception to that is that we do run some programs at the correction centers. And when it's part of their program at the correction center to have this class, then we will make them a certificate of completion and do that. But in general, and we'll write a letter. I mean, if DHS or whatever needs a letter, we'll write a letter of completion.
Yeah.
But yeah, having a ceremony, you know, nobody would come back. So
got
like,
it,
wait,
got it,
it didn't work.
That's interesting. So working with people incarcerated, is there much difference as far as the way that people respond to the program?
The groups are bigger.
Okay.
People have more time on their hands, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And they tend to have a shorter attention span.
Mm.
So we have had to adapt the program a little bit for those who are incarcerated. You know, everybody has their story, you know, and their reasons for being there. So there's been different activities and things that have been added. We work with those facilitators to do it a little bit different than our community group. So, but same material.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many employees do you guys have at ARMS?
We have
roughly
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 We have seven. And we have some part-timers that just facilitate groups that don't actually work in the office. Mm-hmm. And we have a load of volunteers, which are extremely helpful when it comes to banquets in particular.
Of course,
newsletters and all those kinds of things, yeah.
And where are you guys located?
Our address on the website is in Hillsboro. Okay. It's a P.O. box. Our physical location is in Beaverton, but we do not announce the location
because
we want to keep people safe as possible. Herd unit group's in... just to let you know as well and let listeners know, we often have people call and say, I looked for your groups online and I'm frustrated and I can't find them. Well, we do that for their safety, because we don't know when it's their abuser messaging us and saying, where is this group, so that they can go make a group unsafe that night, and we need to keep everybody safe. So they have to call the office to get the information for her journey.
Smart.
So we have counties listed, but we don't actually have locations. So we want to keep everybody safe. And our facilitators too, which are amazing volunteers, and many of us have been with us for 10 to 20 years. It's crazy. They've been there that long.
Yeah. Wow.
Amazing leaders and volunteers. Yep, we love them.
What?
Suzanne,
okay. Well, sounds like we got a caller on the line. Send her through. Suzanne, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I was kidnapped about 3 weeks and a half ago. I've never been kidnapped before. But all I got, what I'm trying to put closely, is that the abuse that I got from both of these men was not, your typical kind of hitting, punching, whatever. But it was very hard for me to recover from this because it was so strange. And people were asking, where have you been? What's gone on? And their immediate reaction was, oh, well, did you call the police?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to do that. They'd give me, the standard lecture thing. And the kind of abuse I received, first of all, it was a man that was played in our backyard as a kid, right? So he was fine then. I hadn't seen him for years. He asked me if I wanted to take a ride with him down to Albany to deliver a package. And he has that awful sort of, oh boy, I'm sexy and I'm fun and I'm, all that kind of stuff. He didn't say it, but he acted like it. Well, I ended up in a trailer park, unable to leave this trailer, and the about kind of abuse was verbal, and all of a sudden, shut up! You're not going to get out of this trailer, or you're a whore, and then my mother. Then the one man kept confusing me as his mother because they lived next door. But the point was, the real problem for me was I got asked so many questions by different people that had never heard of being kidnapped. They didn't even understand what it meant. And I'm still not over this. And I will say, for the Salem Police Department, they assigned a very good female cop to stay with me during, the day hours into the evening. She was excellent. And what really happened was that she stayed in my apartment with me, and nobody else, she answered the door. She did not let other people come in, which was the very best thing that I could. That was a real gift for me. But I also heard she dove deep into these police records, and apparently this trend is growing. These men that are abusing women and children, they do this in another county, so that the police records where they live apparently, don't catch up or don't get a chance to have that on record. But I just thought maybe you all need to know that this is an alive form of abuse. Basically, no food, no warm clothing, just had my jeans and shirt on. At night, there was only one toilet in the middle of the trailer, and all night long, the pornography was turned up full blast in color, and also included killing women in that process.
Suzanne, are you safe?
Pornography.
Suzanne, are you safe now?
I am. I do have. Yes, I do, but I am in my apartment alone now, and so I am signed up to move to another down to Eugene where my son lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just waiting for them to send me the my apartment is available. But I can tell you this, thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel safe.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry you went through that. Very traumatic experience. And I want you to know that I believe you.
Oh, that's another thing.
I know.
That makes my heart smile because a lot of people thought, you know, just kind of shook their heads and,
mm-hmm.
oh my God, that's crazy. And then, you know, walk away.
Yeah.
So I learned not to tell people.
Right. That is what we learn. Yeah. And I want you to know that I believe you and it's not your fault. You're not alone.
Oh, no.
Okay.
It's not. I'm a very nice person.
I'm sure you are. You sound very nice.
Well, what I finally did after that final thing, this is how I escaped. The aggressive guy went out for a while, and I said to the one that owned the trailer, I said, Wes, you are no good. I said, you have some girlfriend calling you every 15 minutes, and all you do is say, And then I said, I thought, all right, I think I can use my karate move on him. But I said, I am going to the nearest store to get myself a sweater and some food. And you're not going to stop me. And I had called him out on the porno, but he, you know, he's sick. He's really sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, don't press the sick button. But I don't know why. I mean, both of these men, about every 20 minutes, of course, they'd sit down and vape and smoke and, you know, drink booze and take pills. I mean, so they were wacky most of the time. So I learned to, really, I shut up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say a thing.
I'm glad you're safe now. I'm glad you're safe. I would encourage you to give our office a call at ARMS.
Thank you.
Okay.
And if you ever want to volunteer to help out with some of this, I'd be very willing to help out any, you know, I'm trained as a psychiatrist, but that isn't much good, not useful.
All right, give me a call at the office and we'll talk more, okay?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Sounds good. Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you. Powerful, man.
That was a lot.
I'm glad she's safe. Yes. I'm glad she's able to make the phone call and you know,
make a move to get further away from that possibility of something like that. That's
yes. So what people need to understand is that there's a phrase kind of floating around these days called trauma-informed, and I don't know if you've heard of that or not.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, in the old days, we would talk to people, and they would seem a little wacky, you know, and we'd be like, oh, what's wrong with you, you know, and these days, we look at them, and we say, what happened to you, what happened to you. Trauma literally does rewire the pathways in the brain so that those smoke signals are off. And with healing, those can be rewired, but it's a lot of work. And that's why when you come across people that are in a tremendous amount of trauma, they're very focused on that, and they can't get past that. You know, they need to talk about it, of course. But trauma-informed policies, procedures, lessons are all very important to that component. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the main reasons why we wanted to have this radio show and, you know, and get the information out there, because we know that we have a certain stigma that we put on people who have gone through trauma, because we don't understand it, or we haven't went through it, and we think, okay, you're just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, not realizing it's so much deeper, you know, and hopefully shows like this and conversations like this and even phone calls like Suzanne encourage us to go a little bit deeper and saying, well, wait a minute, what happened? Instead of, you know, like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about and I don't want to hear it.
Right.
I mean, that's the way we're trained in society. So,
because if we acknowledge it, we have to deal with it.
Right. Exactly. We got to be accountable for being human.
Yeah, and it's scary because what if we do it wrong and what if we don't, you know, there's a lot of components to that psychology of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking that call, because I learned some stuff from you. I said Suzanne's gonna take care of this. I mean, Julie gonna take care of this.
You'll be glad Suzanne is safe.
Yeah, I was just sitting back. She gonna help. But yeah, thank you for that.
No problem.
That was beautiful. We short on time, so let's put out ARM social media ways to contact, website information, so people can support you guys and get a hold of you guys in case they need the support or get some services.
That would be awesome. I'd love for you to visit. Our URL is abuserecovery.org, and our Facebook is facebook.com/abuserecovery. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter, we just got started, but Instagram is a little more up and going. We have a pretty informative blog, and the Facebook page is really supportive. I think we have about 7,000 people on there, and they're 7,000 people on there. Yeah, so they are very, you know, active, and they help each other out. I'm also part of the Voices Committee for the Family Justice Center in Beaverton, and it's Survivor Voices, and we have a group for that as well. So we've been out speaking in the community because people want to hear from survivors. So anybody can talk, you know, contact me with that information as well.
Okay. That being said, any shouts out? Want to shout out Bill?
Thank you to my honey Bill, who's sitting here for moral support. I appreciate it. And all the people who are listening, and to Suzanne, I'm glad you're safe. Yes. And to you guys for having us. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And thanks for coming to the banquet.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
You're going to come next year now too, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Right. You heard it here on the air. He's coming next year.
Yeah, and the food was delicious.
The food was delicious, right?
But no, information was amazing. So thanks again. We appreciate you. I'm sure we'll talk again.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Calculated Conversation. Look us up. All the social medias. Yes, and we out.
Calculated everything.
Correctional facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it get funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what, I won't hesitate to diss one or two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well, I'm dropping English, even if Yella makes it a cappella. I still express yo, I don't smoke weed or sets, cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself, doing good. Spread yourself. For the pop chart, so when should a brother like you start expressing yourself, my boy, and show you how your track?
What up?
Drop English right about now. Getting back to the PG, that's program, and it's easy. Dre is back, new jacks are made hollow. Expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend. The records I spin again and again and again. Yo, you're on the other end. Watch a brother blend dope rhymes with no help. There's no fessing or guessing while I'm expressing.
asking myself, it's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go, they know. Others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they care where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Though some musicians, cause at home, they're scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show, they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to spread the skill.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, listener-powered non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of Flash. Starting Thursday, November 7th, at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland, Flash returns for its fifth anniversary and the retirement of this live theater production. When the Earth is threatened with destruction by the planet Mongo, Flash Gordon attempts to save us. But Ming the Merciless, Emperor of Mongo, has other plans. This production runs from November 7th through November 17th, Friday and Saturday evenings at 7:30 p.m., Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. Again, that's Flash! November 7th through 17th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information, including start times, special performances, and more, can be found at kboo.fm